Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, the Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Hey!
Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast. 0-2-1. But three guys are back in the booth. My name is Nicholas, joined in the booth by Francois and Tim. Gentlemen, what's going on?
I'm in a separate booth.
That's true.
You are in a separate booth.
Plural, my friend. Plural.
But we don't have our friend from last week in the booth beside you, though.
Nope, no distractions this week. We'll be able to keep everything on an even level. It's good for morale.
No James Wisniewski lewd acts going on in the room beside you?
No. Hey, there's the original lewd act right next to me.
So who is the lewd act leader for the week? Is it Brett Favre with the Wang pictures or James Wisniewski with the Hawaiian peace sign during the hockey game?
Have the pictures been released? Have they surfaced anywhere?
No, I don't think so. I'm sure someone will offer a ludicrous sum of money for first rights to publish them, though.
Yeah, well, now Perez Hilton's gone good boy. I guess he won't be in on the bidding. You don't know that? You guys can reference Jersey Shore, but I can't reference Perez Hilton? Come on. So,
as I mentioned earlier, yeah, Sens are 0-2-1. They're playing Carolina at home tonight. I believe there were a ton of tickets available for tonight's game.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Walk-up sales in Ottawa, it's always been a staple.
Yeah, it's the thing to do, right? It was the same way with the Rough Riders.
The
same thing with the Lanes.
I mean, the only issue is you can't really walk up to Scotiabank Place without taking a bus or having an extended car ride to get there. So they have to be playing well to get some of those walk-up ticket sales, too. And they're not really doing that right now with a big, fat winning percentage of .000.
And let's just backtrack a bit here. Graham, you referenced the Rough Riders and the Lynx relying heavily on walk-up ticket sales. Do we see a theme in this at all?
No.
Teams that have left Ottawa?
Yeah, but bad products, right?
And left empty parks?
Yeah, but bad products, right?
Yeah, that's true.
The one thing I noticed with ticket sales with the Sens, at least the past recent couple of years, when we haven't been that sort of dominant out-of-the-gate type team where all the prognosticators are picking us to finish in one of the top three seeds in the conference, is ticket sales generally appear to be slow until around Christmas time, you know, when it starts snowing. And then people really start sort of feeling that hockey vibe in the capital. So I'm fairly confident, provided we can win at some point in the next 2 months, that those ticket sales will pick up, though.
Yeah, a couple things, like surface value alone. Christmas presents, right? I mean, that's a big one. I've often gotten Senators tickets in the past, usually to shitty games like, the Kings when they were bad, or the Panthers or something. But, that's that.
Going back to Francois' point about getting... obviously, it's a problem to get to the rink. It's far out. But at what point do you just say, suck it up as fans and just like support this team no matter what happens on the ice? Obviously, it's a slow start. But I think the general consensus is that this should be a playoff team. They should be contending for a playoff spot anyways. Bad matchup, though. But it's still, go support your team.
Yeah. Well, a lot of professional sports teams don't have their arenas right in the downtown core. And some teams that do have their arenas in the downtown core, like Buffalo or Detroit, don't really have a population in their downtown core anymore. So what do you really want? And, you and I have talked about this a million times before. The Senators are a new team. It's a generational thing, right?
No, that's true, too.
Like, as the as our generation and younger gets older and has the disposable income, they start dumping away on season's tickets. Not that it's a dump. It's a good investment. Then we'll start to see ticket sales improve. But that's why the original six, in my opinion, at least draws so well in Ottawa. There are hockey fans here who like the product. And they want to see their favorite team.
And we are coming off a long weekend. You mentioned that to me before off air.
Yeah, of course. People have been traveling.
Spending money.
It's a short week. People are bogged down at work, right? It just happens.
Actually, another thing comes to mind based on other sports. I was reading about 3 weeks to a month ago, Keith Law on ESPN.com about baseball. And one of the things that's really interesting is the Tampa Bay Devil Rays actually draw quite poorly during the regular season, even though over the past 3 or 4 years, they've been a very competitive team. And they also lead the majors in local viewership. So basically people that live in the Tampa and surrounding area are watching games on TV, but they're not going to games. So Law was curious about this, and he tweeted it on Twitter, said, you know, asking Tampa fans why this is the way it is. And two things came up. Number one was that Tropicana Field is an extremely poor location. As some of you know, it's in St. Petersburg, Florida. So it's about a 30-minute commute sort of in the Tampa area to get to. And also another fan said, well, 10 years of losing or 2 years of winning doesn't make up for 10 years of losing. And I think you can draw some interesting parallels between that situation and the Senators situation in the sense that, like you guys say, it's a generational thing. And we do have a fairly... I should say, like, front-running fan base to a certain extent. That's not quite the right word I wanted to use, but along those lines. So I think it's, you know...
That's what it's been stigmatized as, yeah.
Yeah, so I think until, you know, it becomes ingrained into the city's culture and everything like that, you're going to see some attendance issues arise when the team is not sort of doing great.
Same thing with Tampa. Let's keep talking about this for a bit here. Look at the demographics and the American Snowbirds. We see how popular spring training is in Florida. And even the Rays tried to give away tickets to the last game of the year, did they not? After Longoria and who else was it?
David Price.
Yeah, came out and you know, had some harsh words for the lack of support.
Yeah, another thing about Tropicana Field is it's a terrible venue for baseball. It's what, the second last dome? I think it's closing. I think it closes next year. They move into a new stadium. But in Ottawa's case, it's not a bad venue, even though it's an outdated scoreboard that they use. But it's not necessarily a bad venue. Maybe the location isn't what people want, but it's been 15 years since the place opened. Can we not get over it by now?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. If it wasn't in... there's a large population in Kanata too, right?
No, exactly.
There are people out there. There are a lot of people out in the West End. Like, I live on the west side of downtown. You know, it could be a lot worse. There's worse places to get to. Yeah, it's just nitpicking, right? As the team improves, then so will the tickets. And after the start we've had this year, things can't get any worse. So if there's about 4,000 tickets left today with an 0-2-1 record, then, yeah, I expect 400 tickets left in about a month from now.
Speaking of slow starts, Ottawa's forwards aren't producing right out of the gate. I don't think there's a top six forward right now who has a goal. We've kind of been carried by our third line. What the hell's going on, boys?
Jarkko Ruutu is having a hell of a year. Chris Neal looks in mid-season form already.
What's it going to take for the top two lines to get going?
I think the power play has to get going.
Well, that's the biggest thing.
I think the ability, you know, the extra space that the power play creates for some of the more talented players on our roster, the Kovalevs, the Alfredsons, the Spezzas, to get their confidence going and start feeling like they have more space to work with, even though there is a man advantage, I think that carries over into 5-on-5 play as well. So I think once the power play gets going, you'll start to see some of those top six forwards starting to bring their clip.
How much stock do you guys put in the argument that maybe Corey Clouston should have got more of his vets into more preseason games? People are saying these guys don't have their legs, they're rusty.
Well, I wrote about that 2 days ago, I believe. The schedule wasn't really conducive to carrying veterans. Like, Ottawa played a lot of back-to-back games out of town. So it's tough to like take the Kraft Hockeyville game and then the subsequent night they're playing in Ottawa, right? You're not going to take a bunch of vets down to Dundas and then the next night have a couple, like a bunch of them play the next night. It's just their schedule wasn't conducive to playing the vets in a number of games, especially in back-to-back situations.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, I mean, really, is the preseason exhibition games, is that really important for preparation towards the regular season? I mean, if you draw parallels between other sports, look at the NFL. The Colts are, what, 2-2 right now? No one's saying, well, Peyton Manning should have played in every exhibition game. You know, he might have taken two series in most of them. And I think another example from hockey is Lindy Ruff apparently doesn't believe in exhibition games. He thinks it creates bad habits. He thinks it creates somewhat of a false sense of confidence. So he's just as happy to put his guys through boot camp, lots of line rushes, and focus on conditioning. And I think we saw that actually that, you know, he may be onto something based on how we looked against the Sabres. I mean, they looked like they had their legs under them. They were skating circles around us. So, I mean, there might be something to be said for playing less preseason games, or if you're going to play preseason games, it should be used as an evaluation method for some of the younger players, some of the bubble players. But other than that, like, I don't know really how useful it is to prepare for the regular season.
There's probably some Leaf fan listening to this podcast who's shaking his head saying, "Ha, we played in 9 games. We're 3-0, motherfuckers."
Let's not talk about the Leafs. Let's talk more about the preseason. I thought it was nice this year that we actually had a somewhat decently stocked cupboard to have a look at, see where the kids are at. Obviously, there were some roster spots up for grabs. We saw Zach Smith grab one. We saw David Hale temporarily grab one. But I thought it was nice to get a good look at these guys. Obviously, they didn't prove their worth enough to earn a roster spot. But you got to give these guys some action before sending them back down. It's an evaluation, right?
How do you evaluate him now? He's a healthy scratch.
David Hale?
No, not David Hale. Zach Smith.
Zach Smith. I don't understand. Well, I do understand that. You want to shift gears a little bit. But I don't see how subbing out Zach Smith is really going to make that big of a difference. It's not like you're benching Kovalev or Alfredsson or someone.
It sends a message to the rest of the team. To be fair, like Jesse Winchester is almost a similar player at this stage of his career to Zach Smith. It's kind of a lateral move. It doesn't really do much for the team. I know it was different when Corey Klusen inserted Ryan Shannon back in the lineup a couple days ago. It kind of gave them a bit of a spark. It got some speed. I think that's kind of been one of the things that I've been concerned for the most as I've watched the first 3 games unfold is the lack of speed. I don't know whether that's a systemic problem where Ottawa's gap control is too poor and they're not simplifying the game by making quick short passes so guys can carry speed in the offensive zone. It's just, I find there's a lot of standing around in the neutral zone going on.
No, for sure, and it's definitely translated to the defense core too. Like the amount of times, especially in that Buffalo game, that Derek Roy there would just turn our defensemen around left, right, and center. They couldn't keep up. I mean, a lot of that was Matt Karkner just looking stone-footed and Chris Phillips as well. But they look slow and old and ugly back there.
Yeah, I mean, just following along the lines of that Buffalo game and other things that are going on, I mean, there's no reason on the first goal by Derek Roy when he pulls a drag move on Phillips that guy should not end up on his ass.
Yep.
There's absolutely no excuse for that. I mean, and Phillips is just standing still there. I mean, in general, Phillips has not looked good this season, but That's sort of one microcosm of what's going on right now. It's like it's a team that for some reason there's no confidence, there's no like je ne sais quoi going on, and it's like they're a step behind everything. You know, if Chris Phillips has his confidence, if the team's playing well, Derek Roy probably ends up on his ass on that play 9 times out of 10. But you know, he just is allowed to walk right in, and that was the first goal. And really, there was no doubt that we were not going to make a game of it after that first goal, just based on how it was scored and how our team responded shortly thereafter.
Yeah, and a lot of this goes along with the speed we're talking about. It's the physical element of the Senators' play. The defense haven't been nearly up to snuff. Brian Lee looks completely intimidated on every play. Not that Brian Lee is the source of all the Sens' problems. He's just, you know, one large one. But, you know, it does happen. The bottom six, they've been playing offensive hockey. How would you rate their physical play? Certainly in the Leafs game, everyone looked incredibly intimidated by that roster. Looked quite timid. I'm just, you know, thinking back, you know, 5 years ago to the Ekman soft. We got to play harder to keep up with the Leafs.
I don't find that their board play has been that bad. Like, I find Ottawa's cycling the puck okay, but they're not generating any chances off the cycle. It's just there's a puck control possession going on down low, and they can't do anything with it.
Yeah, it seems like
keep going.
I was just going to say, like, it seems like a lot of the shots are coming from the periphery, too, like from the sideboards, from, like, the outside of the faceoff circle. There's no effort to work the puck back into the slot area, back into high-percentage shooting locations, except for the Neil Kelly-Ruutu line, which is basically they crash the net at all costs, and it's no surprise that they've been the most productive line because they're consistently the line that at least tries to be effective in front of the net in one way or another. And it seems like the skill lines are content to just sort of cycle the puck along the periphery. And they're not getting a whole lot of high percentage chances.
Same thing on the power play too, right? I mean, Senators spend all this time around the perimeter. A lot of ugly, ugly passes you've seen hop over Gonchar and Carlson's stick. I don't know whose fault those are, but they're not pretty. And these lazy shots from the point that are hitting bodies in front, right into the goalie, it just looks indifferent almost.
I just find with Ottawa, it's very easy to read their power play. Everything looks so choreographed and set up. There's no
movement.
There's no spontaneity. There's no quick passes to like isolate players and get them open. It's just very they're very easy to play against right now.
Moving into space is, you know, common offensive practice in all sports, right? Maybe not so much baseball, but hitting into space is a good one for that sport. But yeah, exactly. The power play is just not demonstrating that. People aren't getting away good shots. And how much of this to be blame on our good old friend Carvel?
Again, I've never been an NHL coach before, but...
Someday.
Where Gonchar and Carlson are playing on the points right now makes no sense. Makes no sense. And as Graham mentioned in his Kovalev piece a few days ago, he's not playing with Gonchar, which was supposed to be the original plan. And so, I mean, I have no... Like, if you're minimizing the threat of a Gonchar one-timer shot on the power play, you're already starting out way behind the start line. You're already starting out way behind the eight ball on the power play. And there's no movement. There's no defenseman pinching down low looking for cross-crease passes or anything like that. It's just, it's like they're moving it around the you know, it's very frustrating.
Let's talk about Alexei Kovalev. Do we want to take a page out of the Sun book and go to town on him right now, or is it still too early?
It's still too early. We can do that after we cut some interviews.
Okay.
Because we have two coming up. So we'll hold off on that till the end. But how about we just take five, and we'll come back with our guest.
Sounds good.
All right.
Yeah, sounds great.
Remember when we had them all on the run? And the night we saw the midnight sun. Remember saying things like we'll sleep when we're dead. And thinking this feeling was never gonna end.
All right, listeners, we're back on the line with Kasper Zdogovins from the Binghamton Senators. Kasper, how's it going? Thanks for coming on the program.
Hey, yeah, how are you?
Doing well, thanks. So, big news. You scored a ridiculously beautiful shootout goal. How has the response been down in Binghamton?
It's been crazy. My guy's been trying to do the same move in the practice now, and it's been fun, especially when last year they told me to do it while I was doing it in practice all the time. They told me I have to do it in a game, so I did it.
Now, were you worried about what would have happened if you didn't score the goal?
Actually, no, because it was an exhibition game, and it was the first time I tried to do it in the game, and I thought that's the best time to do it because I was going to do it in regular season game, but I guess can't do it now. Too many people seen it.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have seen it. I believe you're what people call an internet sensation now because of that goal.
It was okay.
So, Kaspers, you came into camp this year. You got a little bit of an exposure last year. You played one game with the Senators after having a pretty good season down in Binghamton. I think you scored 21 goals and you had 24 assists. How was your camp this year? And maybe if you'd like to comment on your the rookie orientation camp as well down in London.
Yeah, we started a tournament in London. I think the team played well, and I had some good games too. And it was tough because it was just the first games after summer, and you don't play hockey in the summer. So it's kind of good thing to have play exhibition games before the camp. And then the camp went well. Had a good practices and everything, and played one exhibition game pretty good. Didn't get much ice time though, but still think played well. And just too many good players in Ottawa organization, so it was tough to make the team, but I did my best, and now I'm in Binghamton working hard to get back in Ottawa.
Kasper's Bingo's 1-1 at this point. You know, you guys have a lot of players that Ottawa is very optimistic on, including yourself. How's your experience been so far? You know, what's the vibe in the room, and how do you guys feel you can do as a team this year?
I think we have a really good team here and a great group of guys. We might be a little younger team than any other team, but I think we have a lot of talent here. And so far, we won and won in the season. I think we have a great coach here, so all the guys will be working and try to win more games than last year. Hopefully, we can make the playoffs, and some guys will hopefully get a chance to go to Ottawa and play there.
Caspers, what was your Olympic experience like this year? What kind of learning experience was it to play on such a large scale?
It was really fun. You could have compared yourself to the best players in the world. It was really tough for Team Latvia because we don't have many NHLers. So it was fun, definitely fun to play against teams like Russia, Slovaks, and Czechs. And we almost beat Czechs, but turned out we lost in overtime. But I think we put some heat on them, so it was fun, definitely fun. And Olympics and World Championships is always a high level to play at. And like I said, it's all the best players in the world go there, so it's fun to play.
What was your favorite off-ice Olympic moment or memory?
I would say probably Olympic Village. It was just the way it's set up and the way how all the athletes live, and it's in the middle of downtown in Vancouver. It was just the highest security thing I ever seen in my life. There were like metal detectors in every corner, and it was just amazing. And probably the other thing was all the fans, Canadian hockey fans in Vancouver. It was just packed with them, and they didn't care about any other sport as long as hockey wins games for them, and it was just crazy.
That must have been pretty exciting for you. So as this season goes on, Caspers, how have you adapted to your new coach, Kurt Kleinendorf? Do you think he's a big difference from Don Nachbauer last year?
I think he can teach more, and he's a great coach with the younger guys because we have a lot of them. He worked with the Team USA, like under 20 team, so he can tell you a lot of things that you need to work on, and he will have a good practices so the younger guys work hard, and we can learn a lot of things from him. And he played professional hockey, and I think he coached in Europe and played in Europe too, so it's kind of good for both, and for Europeans here and for North Americans too. So it's a lot of great things about him.
Along the lines of development, Caspers, from a personal standpoint, what are some of the goals you've set out for yourself this year in terms of your own personal development in hoping to build a great season you had last year and the Olympic appearance?
I just think I have to work on my consistency here, and that's been the biggest problem of my career. You can have one good year and the next year is average, so I want to work on consistency and work hard every game and show them that I can play in NHL and hopefully get a chance. And like NHL, you get maybe one game, but you have to be best at it to get a second game, so you can't just show up and play average. So one of my goals probably this season is if I get called up, I want to stay there for a little longer than one game.
A lot of people in Ottawa are really big bingo fans. People really pay attention and monitor the team, and people are very interested in Ottawa's development system. Tomorrow night, you guys have a huge game against the Hershey Bears, who won the Calder Cup last year, if I'm not mistaken. Who are you playing with on a line for our readers and listeners out there, and what kind of chemistry have you developed with your line mates?
Yeah, Hershey is a really good team, and it will be a big battle. And we're ready, though, to play them, and we'll battle any team. And I think our team is good enough to beat a team like Hershey. And I'm playing in a line with Eric Condra and Jim O'Brien. I think we have we're good together on the games. I played with Eric last year, and Jimmy is coming in big, 3 goals in 2 games, and it's been good work together for us. We've been playing as a second line, maybe third line in the team, and working hard, scoring some clutch goals in the last couple of games, so it's been fun.
Yeah, you're off to a great start this year, already with a goal and 2 assists.
Caspers, we're going to go through like a little quick hit, so what we're going to do is just ask you just a quick question, and then you just throw us like the first thing that comes to mind. How does that sound?
Okay.
What is the best thing to do in Binghamton on a Friday night, besides play hockey?
Eat dinner.
Binghamton's not that boring, is it?
Smaller city.
All right. Casper, if you could recommend one tourist location to visit in Latvia, where would you recommend our listeners go?
Arena Riga, the hockey rink. Best fans ever you'll ever see.
What was more special for you, your first game in the NHL or your first game in the Olympics, or the entire Olympic experience?
I think first game in NHL, because I've been playing hockey for one reason, to make NHL, I guess.
And along the lines of that first NHL game, what is the one key moment that really sticks out to you?
Where I fell 3 times in one shift.
All right, Caspers, for our listeners out there, what is the one single most important thing to know about the way you play hockey?
I don't know, I like to carry puck, so watch me out there. I can skate from one end to the other end.
When can we expect your next internet video?
Hopefully in the next couple weeks. I have another move getting ready.
Oh, nice.
Oh, sweet. Excellent. Well, hopefully the next one comes in a Sens uniform.
Well, Caspers, it's been awesome having you on the show. Hope you enjoyed your time. Thanks for taking the time to come in and talk to us. And we wish you the best of luck tomorrow night against Hershey.
Thanks, guys. Have fun.
Okay, take care, Caspers.
Thanks a lot, Caspers.
All right, Sens fans, welcome back. That was a great interview with the dog man, Caspers Dogovans. And, you know, he's a pretty cool guy, and it's kind of interesting and exciting hearing him say he's got a new move in his arsenal. Now, Tim, I know you're still a little bit fired up from having brought up Kovalev's poor play earlier on, and we got some time before our next guest comes on, so you guys want to talk about that really quick, what are our impressions, and what do we think a potential solution is?
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up after talking to Caspers, actually. I like the sounds of him carrying the puck end-to-end. Looking forward to that in a consistent year from him. Kovalev, people are all over this guy everywhere, right? Am I the only one picking this up? The internet, mainstream media.
We all love him.
Everyone loves AKA.
He's great.
Yeah, he is, right? Consistent player, really gives it all. Is it too early to really start hating on this guy?
Is it ever too early? To be honest, like, this is like residual carryover from last year as well, right? Like, he didn't have a great second half. He carried the team for a stretch of games, like, 14 games or something like that?
All right, well, forget that. Like, let's just talk new season here. Is it fair, though, for the fans, even some of us in private conversations, to maybe be singling out Alexei Kovalev over the play of guys like Daniel Alfredsson or Jason Spezza? Is this blame being wrongly attributed to him?
The one thing that stands out with Kovalev for me is I just don't see him creating a lot of offense for himself.
I mean you're right, and that was the one thing in Montreal where when he was really motivated, he could really take over a game on his own. He could create his own chances. Through the first 3 games, not a whole lot of indication that he's getting to that point anytime soon.
And like, I've talked to you guys off air about this ad nauseum, but was he not brought in originally to be perhaps like the leader of the power play? Like, he was supposed to re-energize and produce, but he's on the second unit. Like, Brian Murray at the beginning of the season talked about this guy and saying, you know, this guy is a complimentary player, and right now they're treating him like one. Like, he's not even playing with Sergei Gonchar, who's allegedly supposed to wake him up. So what the hell's going on?
Kovalev just looks completely disinterested and unmotivated out there. You'd swear this guy had just signed a 10-year contract. Forget the fact he's actually playing in a contract year. And he said, you know, jokingly, he wants to play till he's 50 or whatever it was.
He's pacing himself.
Yeah, pacing himself, what, to play for 50? He's just going to show up and lollygag around? If he keeps playing like this, you know, he's not going to be signing an NHL contract anytime soon.
Well, we've had some readers on the site even bring up the point that maybe they can send him down.
You think that's a possibility? It's a lot of cap space.
I don't know.
That's a big asset in this NHL, right? I mean, they sent David Hale down for less.
I get the impression that Kovalev is more, he's a fairly popular guy in the dressing room, too. I would see him as the type of guy that would command a lot of respect in the dressing room, and despite the fact that sometimes when you're watching him, he looks more or less disinterested or like a wandering corpse out there, I get the impression that for some reason the guys on the team sort of are magnetized to him, they gravitate towards him. So if you send a guy like that down to Binghamton, like, I mean, I think it's sending a message to the rest of the team that you're not determined to necessarily put your best roster on the ice on a game-to-game basis, because like it or not, the players in practice see what the guy can do. They know what the talent level is. A lot of them did when he went down last year before the playoffs. A lot of them said very complimentary things about him and how the dynamics of the team and the fact that he wouldn't have to be accounted for by the other team was really going to affect the team. So from a marketing standpoint in selling it to the fans, yeah, maybe sending him down is great to try and boost up ticket sales a little bit, especially if we're not playing that well. But I think we have to go with Kovalev for better or for worse on this one, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, your 2010-2011 Ottawa Senators, people, it's a marketing standpoint to send this guy down?
Our marquee free agent, $5 million of your season ticket dollars well spent. Riding the bus.
No, but I mean, what I'm saying is that for some reason, people like to point the finger at Kovalev from a fan standpoint. So what I'm saying is if the team sends him down, maybe people will go, oh, well, finally, it was about time. They should have sent him down. Like, he's a very easy guy to hate on.
You know what? I'll give you this. It's worked for Brian Burke, right? You know, threatening to waive veterans. Obviously, he just waived Jeff Finger the other day, a long-expected move. But it seemed to work for the Leafs, right? You know, every day is an opportunity to grab a roster spot. Every day is training camp, and that's worked for them. Maybe. I'm not going to advocate it, but it's a theory.
Oh, I'm just looking forward to July 1st, like a lot of our listeners.
But the thing is, do you really trust... I mean, do you really trust Brian Murray to go out there in a free agent market, like based on his track record of signing free agents and of making trades at the pro level? Like, is that necessarily better to give the guy a plethora of options going into a free agency period?
He hasn't signed an unrestricted free agent to a lengthy deal that is like absolutely handicapped this team, though. So am I worried? Not really, because I don't think Brian Murray's going to be here by the end of the year. Like, he might move on. And just stay on as vice president in some kind of advisory capacity, and maybe he turns the reins over to someone else.
One more draft. That's all I want from him.
That's it? That's
one more draft. Yep. Pick your stud forward. Let's move on.
All right, guys. Well, maybe our next guest might have his own take on what should be done with Alexei Kovalev and what's going on with the Senators and how we can fix this team so that we are primed to make a playoff run again this year. So how about we take a quick little break, and then we'll be joined by the Hockey News' Adam Proto when we get back.
Sounds good.
Works for me.
All right, listeners, we're back on the line with Adam Proto from the Hockey News. Adam, welcome to the Sixth Sense Podcast. How are you?
Guys, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. All right, I'll just address the elephant in the room right off the bat. You were one of the prognosticators who had one of the more infamous selections for the Ottawa Senators. You knew this was coming,
right?
To finish 10th in the Eastern Conference this year. I hate to say it, but you must be feeling pretty good about that right now.
I never feel good about a team losing. I don't want to spread that rumor, but but go ahead. Sorry.
So what have you seen from the Senators so far that have justified your predictions? Where do you see this team going forward? What do they need to correct?
Well, yeah, as I said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah, I really, you know, we have to put together a list because people like them, and I think I always make clear in my predictions, guys, that, you know, the difference between 8th place and 10th or 11th or 12th place in today's NHL can be very, very slim. I think people just look at the number and kind of react emotionally to that. So to me, it's not necessarily an indictment of everybody on this team. I think there are some, you know, some definite great players on the team, Jason Spezza included. I don't know that one of the people that believes Jason Spezza is the biggest problem with the Ottawa Senators. But, you know, there were just holes in that lineup for me and you know, question marks where, you know, I think after you don't see things for a certain while from, you know, from a player, whether it's because of injury, because of Pascal Leclerc, or because he hasn't done it before for a full season, really, like Brian Elliott. I mean, those are the type of things I think that stuck in our minds when we were making our collective prediction for the magazine. And really, you know, I still think that it's possible that the Senators can make it. But, you know, having from what I've seen so far, to answer your question, they just don't look like a team that, you know, that is pulling in all in the same direction, to use that cliche. It's they were very, very disjointed. I said, I think, on Twitter during the Toronto game when they were here last Saturday, that I really have never seen a Senators team, you know, since I've been covering the NHL for more than 10 years now, I really never saw a Senators team that looked that invisible on the ice. And when Jarkko Ruutu is your leading scorer and Chris Neal is your second leading scorer, at least before the other night, I mean, that's the type of thing that, you know, I think really highlights some of the issues. I think, you know, Kovalev should be sent down. I think if Eugene Melnyk wants to make a statement, that's the best statement to make. I mean, there's a guy that, you know, that the book is out on, has been out on for a lot of years now. And I think if this malaise keeps going, you know, why not? I mean, I'll play devil's advocate with that one. I could certainly see what kind of message that went up if, you know, if that apparition, as I called him online, and his ghost winds up showing up for a few games, you know, what they lose in you know, the rest of the lineup, seeing him kind of float out there, you know, I think might justify it. But again, I think back to your original point, you know, they could make the playoffs. They could go on a great run. They did last year. And you know, hope that other teams aren't any better than they were last season. I think, you know, again, being based in Toronto, it's tough not to talk about the Leafs sometimes, but they're a team that I think that is better so far. And you know, I'm not sure that's a great harbinger for the Senators.
Going back to your point about this is the most disjointed you've ever seen in a Senators team. I think if Craig Hertzberg ever hears you say that on our podcast, you're going to have a thank you note in your email inbox.
Christmas card for life right there.
But Adam, I think it was in your prognostication before the season that you said Brian Murray has his team in an underdog status. It's a status that they embrace. With your prognostication, don't you feel like you played into his hands just a little bit, just to push that?
You know what? I honestly don't think about any GM's predicament when I make the predictions, guys. It's something that I just kind of try and look at it as objectively as possible, given, you know, I think, you know, the base knowledge I think a lot of us should have in this sport that, it, you know, when it comes down to it, it's all subjective, right? It's all, you know, to a certain degree, you know, you're projecting what you think will happen with that player and with that team and how they mesh together. So, you know, I think Brian Murray, you know, for people who call the Ottawa Senators heavy favorites, would have been, you'd be out of your mind to do that. They're certainly not regarded amongst people in the league that I talk to as, you know, as in the upper echelon of even the Eastern Conference. There might be a, you know, a fifth place team. There might be a sixth place team in the East when it's all said and done. But I don't think people believe that this team can really compete as it's structured right now with the Washingtons, with the Pittsburghs, even though Pittsburgh hasn't looked great at all. And Washington has had some issues. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I never mind being proven wrong. But, you know, part of my job is to, you know, be the bad guy in towns this year like Ottawa, or, you know, it seems every year like Edmonton. For frankly, it's, you know, you have to tell, you know, your readership, I think, in this job what you hear. And again, that doesn't mean that teams can't overachieve or defy expectations. That's what sports is all about. But I think if we didn't set, you know, again, what predictions are ultimately expectations, I think if we didn't set that bar, then you know, what fun would it be to kind of wander through a season and go, well, I guess anything can happen to any team. You know, I don't think you'd have too many fans sitting down to argue over that kind of stuff.
Adam, we are a little bit surprised that the Senators are 0-2-1 at this point. You might not be, but can you just maybe touch on a couple of the early season shockers that you have at least noted in the first few games here?
You mean Senators specifically?
No, sorry, across the league, actually.
Oh, across the league. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, no, I think the, you know, everybody thought that the Florida Panthers would be bad. Everybody thought that the Anaheim Ducks would be bad. I don't know that everybody thought that the Anaheim Ducks would be as bad as they were before last night's win, and the Vancouver Canucks should really be shaking their heads. But, you know, I think for me, the team that, you know, if you look down, obviously the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, with one win in four games, a lot of goals given up, and Marc-Andre Fleury not really looking that great. That would be a surprise. Certainly the Devils, I think, you know, the way they've reacted, everybody knows about their cap situation and you know, how many players they're dressing on a nightly basis. But man, you know, poor John McClain is kind of getting fed to the Wolves, and that looks like really, again, tough environment to win in with a lot of pressure. And I think a situation where Lou Lamoriello has had the Kovalchuk contract kind of forced upon him by the Devils ownership. So those two teams in particular, you know, are probably negative surprises. Positive surprises, you know, I'm trying to think. I mean, Edmonton, obviously, you know, nobody thought Edmonton would look quite this hot and only give up a goal, you know, two goals in as many games. And again, I think other than that, the West is so close that, you know, there were teams I picked to be in the playoffs this year, like Nashville, you know, that have looked pretty decent right now, guys. And you know, they may be a surprise to some people. I don't think the West, you know, by and large, can be a surprise at all, other than maybe, again, the fact that you know, the Minnesota Wild, people thought they'd be bottom feeders, but maybe not a 15th place team. And, you know, that said, it's very early and they've only played a couple games. But, yeah, I think, you know, as the season plays out and we see whether Edmonton and Toronto can hold up, we got to mention the Leafs too, you know, being as you know, good as they are. I think I had them at number 3 in my power rankings and people lost their minds. Some people lost their minds, but, you know, in my mind, they've looked pretty determined. I think Ron Wilson took a lot of heat last year for not having them prepared, and you really can't say the same thing this year. You look at their goal differential. You know, it's right up there with everybody, goals for, goals against differential. It's right up there with anybody in the league. And I know Ottawa didn't give them a real test, but, you know, if they can keep this up much longer, this city that I'm living in may burn down sooner than later.
So as we talk about people losing their minds, are you surprised that we only had to wait a week into the NHL season to see our first serious concussion and our first stretcher on the ice?
Not at all. If you've been reading my stuff over the years, guys, you know exactly how I feel about it. It's a continuing travesty. You know, that we have to bring this up each and every year when, you know, when even last year, I believe I heard a GM talk. I can't remember off the top of my head who a GM said, you know, I'm not even really sure we have a concussion problem in this league. Might have been Lou Lamoriello, but I don't want to say it was him for sure. But, you know, that's the type of mentality you're dealing with in the upper echelons of the hockey world. It's a bedrock, kind of conservative, very protective, very provincial attitude. You know, that these people know better than doctors, for instance. You know, Charles Tater, he's only a head doctor, for God's sakes, but we don't want to listen to people like him. We don't want to take precautions. We don't want to, you know, establish independent doctor bodies to, you know, to really step in and you know, lay down some hardcore enforcement rules on when a player can return and really prevent the Ian LaPerriere's, you know, protect these guys from themselves. I mean, you know, God bless them all. They're fantastic guys. I was, as I said, I think online too, that, you know, I was one of the guys that lobbied really hard for us to name Ian LaPerriere the toughest guy in the league last year. I think you look over the course of his career, he's done a lot. He's given up a lot. He's the type of foot soldier you need. But, you know, but if you allow him to put his own health in danger, you know, some people will see that as a great character trait. Well, I bet you his family doesn't really see that as a great character trait. And that's what I think we always forget when we talk about these guys, like they're pieces of meat, like they're just names and numbers and robots. They're out on the ice that, you know, when the game's over, they're going home to a family that loves them just as much as our family loves us, you know, that's taking part in this podcast right now. So, you know, to just keep throwing these guys to the wolves for somebody's supposed entertainment when we all know, you know, especially with the Ivan and stuff, you know, seeing him carry it across the ice was just disgusting. And pointless, and at a point in the game where it didn't really matter, and all this, you know, this is the exact type of fight that the NHL tried, or at least made, you know, lip service about getting out, but wilted as per usual, as they used to do with obstruction year after year. So, you know, it's going to take, you hate to say it, it's going to take a real tragedy along the lines of a Don Sanderson, you know, dying, and, you know, on that day, I just hope all these people that, you know, that dying out on, you know, these heavyweight player fights as if they're, again, as if they're a video game, I hope they can look themselves in the mirror.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think that there's a real, almost a disconnect between the reality of it, as you just got around, and if, you know, GMs are suggesting that concussions aren't really an issue, then I can't wait to see what happens when steroids eventually get addressed. I'm not sure if you picked up the Globe and Mail over the past, I think it was 2 days ago, they ran a story about new football helmets that had came out that have air shock absorbers instead of foam protection.
Right.
Graham and I were kicking around some thoughts earlier on what we could do or what the NHL could do to prevent concussions. These new helmets, the same technology could be applied to hockey helmets. Bigger ice might potentially also discourage this. Is there anything that you see that the NHL could implement?
Well, I think you're definitely on the right track. And, you know, certainly Mark Messier's, you know, helmet company or new helmet style is also purports to, you know, to address the concussion issue. You know, I always think, guys, that this is a league that is criminally underpoliced and you know, underpunished. You know, you want to burst out laughing, and thank God I'm not at some of Gary Bettman's press conferences, because I probably would burst out laughing when he says things like Coley Campbell. You know, his decision-making efforts in the commissioner's office are always consistent. I mean, what kind of world are these guys living in? It's not reality. It's the NHL bubble. And I think for that reason, when they say, you know, a two-game suspension here is enough or a four-game suspension there is enough, it's clearly not. They're still happening. They're happening at an increased rate. You're losing talent before you need to. You're losing guys like Pat LaFontaine. Like, I mean, that's how far back it goes now, right? I mean, these guys are getting to be distant parts of history, yet they're all, you know, leaving the game perhaps earlier than they otherwise, you know, would have. LaFontaine, Keith Primeau, Adam Deadmarsh, I mean, Eric Lindros, Brett Lindros. You know, hockey, to me, this idea that hockey just has a finite amount of talent, that's an ownership mentality where they really think, you know, people like us and fans and media will just buy whatever they throw out on the ice. That's the way the NHL used to operate, guys, when they, you know, when they talked about, oh, people come to see the front of the jersey, not the back. Well, no, people, this is a different sports world we live in, and I think people become emotionally invested in players. They want to see them do well. They want to see them succeed. They want to have some type of emotional reaction from these guys, and the type of emotional reaction you don't want is, oh, my God, I wish that guy had played longer. I mean, that's what hockey is doing to itself. It's cannibalizing itself at the highest level. It's allowing kids to think, you know, that type of stupid behavior is okay, and that, you know, anytime a player plays on the line, you know, the connotation is and the expectation is that occasionally they go over it. Well, if you punish somebody harshly enough and really hit these guys in the wallet, and not just the guys, the more I cover this league, the more I get to really not like owners, because these guys are making a lot of money off of these players and their bodies and their brains and their joints. You know, their limbs, everything. They are making a fair amount of cake no matter what they tell you. And so I'm all for finding teams after a certain point, too. If you want to be employing an idiot out there, if you want to be employing a guy who can't play the game when it really counts in the playoffs, you know, you should be responsible just as much as that guy is. So, you know, I'm all for fining players and suspending players, but I'd like to see the owners take it, you know, right in the pocketbook, too, because they're as much to blame as anybody.
Adam,
sorry for that rant. Was that I almost ran out of breath?
Oh no,
sorry.
No! I think that's quite progressive and appropriate. More people need to hear it.
Have you've caught your breath?
Yeah, I got a bit of an oxygen pen here. I'm getting older.
you know, one of the more dramatic things that the league might be able to do is, for example, something like increasing the size of the ice, where the league would be able to market it as potentially a more dynamic and offensive product where players have more room to operate and so on and so forth. But, you know, that might mitigate the risk of concussions with, you know, players being able to evade hits and whatnot. What do you think of some of the more progressive or extreme measures that could be taken where it's not necessarily up to the league having to police concussions, but by changing some of the aspects of the game, it probably eliminates some of the risks as well?
Yeah, that's a fair point for sure. I think, you know, I don't know that increasing the ice is something that is realistic. You know, again, given the fact that owners don't want to retrofit buildings, given the fact that they don't want to take out the most expensive seats in the house, although I think you could probably make the case, guys, in certain arenas, certain markets, that might prevent some embarrassment from, you know, if you're in Sunrise or other places where they don't sell out the place at the start of the year, you know, that might be a good idea. But I just think that's going to be a very, very tough sell for this any owners in this league. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, if they can do it, good for them. I think there's some people that will tell you that a bigger ice surface would lead to, you know, more trap-type hockey, more European hockey. You always hear that. I've never seen it in practice with the North American game, so I don't think anybody can say for sure. But, yes, the ice is definitely a factor. I think, you know, when my buddy Jeff Merrick, is the polar opposite of me in most things, but, he made a point that's hard to refute, that, that when you allowed obstruction for it to happen, it prevented a lot of this stuff from going on. Guys that were allowed to interfere basically, took away the speed that you're now seeing. But I don't think that's going to change. So, to me, it has to be about just changing the culture, about changing, the expectations of what will happen to these guys. I mean, you'll see it throughout the year, whether it's about concussions or a stick swinging incident or anything like that. I mean, if the league doesn't suspend guys to the degree that they should, you'll always see it in players' eyes. You'll hear it, read it between the lines of what they say. They will take justice into their own hands. And I just think for too long, self-policing, player policing in this league has led us to this stage, has led us to the fact where we can't even have a clean body check anymore without a friggin' 5-minute scrum. Because everybody's got there. These guys are supposed to be tough athletes. Yet everybody's rushing to each other's defense, like, they got Maid Marian beside them on the ice. And I just think, that there's all kinds of stupidity. I mean, Jeff Merrick and I were going at it on Twitter last night, and, this whole idea of, the people that say fighting is an integral part of the game, well, and is inherently part of the game, like part of the rules. First of all, it's illegal in the rules, but beyond that, I mean, if they want it to be part of the game, why shouldn't you have to wear a helmet like every other part of the game? Or, it's just all selective application of certain mentality, this kind of macho attitude that I was a part of too when I was a kid. I mean, that's my dirty little secret, is that I was a bigger kid than a lot of kids my age, and I was looked to, for that same type of thing. It felt good to stick up for your teammates. You understand the emotional appeal and the, even the physical jolt you get of adrenaline from doing that type of stuff. But, ask Todd Bertuzzi how that worked out for him. Ask Steve Moore how that worked out for him. Both those guys are victims of the same hockey culture. And again, that's why I always think back to, back to your original point about the concussions. If guys don't understand that it doesn't make sense for you to come back to a game, rush yourself ahead of time or convince yourself that you're okay, because, what you're doing is you're basically, you'll have the memory for that second or that night, but who knows, maybe you have early onset Alzheimer's, maybe you suffer from spots in the brain like Chris Benoit, that unfortunate wrestler who killed his wife and family did someday. I mean, those are extreme cases, but that's the problem, is that there is no definite answer for what can happen to you. And we're starting to see with, Reg Fleming, the old NHLer that died and had those same type of early onset dementia issues, there is a price to be paid for all this macho crap that that I think falls by the wayside in the playoffs. Guys learn to suck it up, they learn to play through it, and they don't have to respond with a face wash every single time. That to me is real toughness, and again, that just is going to take years, unfortunately, or a lawsuit, or a government body stepping in to drag these guys into the century that we're actually living in.
Adam, I was one of the one of your Twitter followers who was watching your conversation with Jeff Merrick unfold last night. I was kind of glad. It was interesting to see, because you guys were getting kind of heated. I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah, we are. No, it sounds like that on the thing, but he knows he's never going to change my mind. I know I'm never going to change his, and I think it's just fun to spar.
Well, it was nice that it didn't devolve into like a James Wisniewski, Lou Jester kind of incident. But
or a Brett Favre Wang picture.
I know which one would be doing that. It wouldn't be me.
I noticed on the Hockey News website, you run a feature. I think it's a weekly feature called that. I'm wondering if you'd be interested in sticking around for a little quick hit segment with us.
Yeah, sure. How much longer do you need? If you need me for a little bit, that's great. No problem.
Very quick, very quick.
Okay.
It's my first question. Adam, I'm going to ask you, you're a big CCR fan, it seems. Do you know what state, or even more specifically, what city CCR is from?
Ooh, that's a great question. I don't. I'm usually pretty good. I usually destroy people at, like, Rock and Roll Jeopardy, but usually just with song lyrics and stuff. They got to be from the South, right?
Yeah, that would be common thinking.
Florida?
They're from San Francisco, believe it or not.
Oh, San Francisco.
Yep.
Cool.
There you go.
Okay, I'm over one. Give me something easier.
All right, Adam. Here's an interesting question. So, you cover a broad range of teams, almost all of them. We want to know, what is your favorite non-traditional hockey city or hockey market?
That's a good question. I'd probably this stage in my career, because I haven't been to every non-traditional market, but, you know, going to Columbus was a lot of fun for me a couple years ago, guys, when unfortunately I lost a bet, looked like a moron more than I occasionally do in print, and had to go down there in Civil War gear. Because the playoffs, the Blue Jackets made the playoffs, and I made a bet midseason that they would never make it because their power play percentage efficiency was like 9.8, and I thought there is no chance that any team ever makes the playoffs with that type of playout for of power play win efficiency percentage. So wound up having to get dressed up in Civil War gear, had to find a costume shop in Toronto, and went down with a couple guys from the Hockey News, and we had a lot of fun. You got to see. You know, to me, that's the fun part of, you know, seeing a newish market like that, you know, really get its first taste of playoff hockey, of, you know, of the culture and the excitement of the Stanley Cup, and to see people respond to it the way the Blue Jackets did, you know, was really nice. I think that was one of the best parts for me growing up as a kid was, you know, being a baseball fan and watching the Blue Jays blossom. And even though the Jackets haven't really responded to that degree, they haven't won any types of championships or even, you know, even a playoff series, you know, I think it's that type of thing that you absolutely need at least a little taste of if you want to keep these non-traditional markets going. And I'm a guy that, you know, that doesn't begrudge non-traditional markets, you know, if that support is there. I think, you know, it's not a crime to want to grow the sport. It's not a crime to say, you know, the game isn't Canada's, as beer companies and banks would like to have us believe. You know, I think the game is the world's to grow, and I just think, unfortunately, the NHL hasn't done a good enough job of understanding that, you know, it takes more than an NHL team in a market to grow that sport. You have to invest in infrastructure. You have to invest in amateur rinks the way the Dallas Stars have done, the way they're learning to do in California and starting to produce players out of those states. I mean, it's no coincidence that, of course, you have to once in a while to draw fans, otherwise you become the Florida Panthers, but beyond that, you need to get kids involved, immersed into the hockey culture, into what type of sacrifice it takes, not just from the player involved, but their family, you know, to really, really appreciate the sport at the grassroots level. And you know, if cities are willing to do that, if you can find owners that are willing to be that patient and aren't in it for the quick turnaround or in some cases, a lot of cases with the NHL, but just the swindle a la Boots Del Biagio, you know, you can grow this game. It's just going to take a lot longer, I think, than, you know, than this quick fix. The Kings have been in the league 40 years, and if they don't win, they're still, you know, not guaranteed to sell out. So, you know, I tried to be optimistic about hockey. There are a lot of things that make me skeptical and pessimistic and even depressed. But, you know, the good news is that, you know, the people in Canada, and I think people outside of Canada that love the game really do love it as much as any sports fan, and hopefully the saner minds eventually went out.
Actually, Adam, I just I got to let you know this text message I just got because you mentioned Columbus. I guess the game's right. Going on right now. I don't know what's going on with LeClaire, but my dad just texted me saying that friggin' LeClaire must have osteoporosis. We basically got nothing for Vermette, so I thought you'd get a good laugh out of that.
That's great.
All right, I got a quick impromptu quick hit for you. At the yep. Columbus game, did you dress up like one of Grant's guys or General Lee's Legion?
Well, I'm trying to think. I was from the north. I wanted to go with the winners.
Oh, right. There you go.
I didn't want to come in looking like I was waving the Confederate flag. That's for sure.
Good choice.
Yeah, thanks.
So, Adam, now that Cito Gaston has officially left the Blue Jays, what's your favorite memory of Cito?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, you know what, guys, I lived in New York for a year, so and I lived right in the second year of their second world championship. So, you know, I got to see them in some New York City bars. And I think one of my favorite memories was, you know, making a bet. I was with a bunch of students, fellow students at a school, and a bunch of Canadians were there. And so we were all very invested and interested. And I kind of looked at this one guy as we were cheering against the White Sox. I believe it was right in the first round of the playoffs, and you know, Cito was looking like his stony self on the bench, and I believe Todd Stottlemyre was pitching that night, and that was the game. Well, let me tell you the first part of this guy comes wandering over to me and says, "Why are you cheering for a Canadian team?" I said, "Well, dude, I'm from Toronto," and he said, "Well, do you want to make a bet on the game for every run that that Chicago scores, I will, or sorry, I think it was the Philly game, to tell you the truth, it was the fact, but he said, for every run Toronto scores, I will buy you and your entire table, which was about five, six, seven people, a round of drinks, and you do the same for me if the Philly score. I said, sure, thinking that my table would have helped me out when they kind of, when I made the bet, they all looked at me like I was a stooge, and basically I was on my own, so I had to pay basically for his round of folks that he was with, which was about the same amount of people, and he had to do the same for me. Well, that was the 15-14 game, if you remember from that World Series. And and I think after the seventh or eighth run, I almost burst into tears at the bar because I was like, dude, I completely ran out my bank account. You probably don't believe me. You think I'm welching on the bet. But turns out the guy was like a multimillionaire, and he was very, very generous. And, you know, I still remember cursing Cito for not learning how to use his bullpen, apparently, but you know, that certainly stands out for me. It's always nice to watch a game from your own country in a foreign land. You really get a heightened sense of excitement, and yeah, and I'll never forget the Joe Carter home run, watching it from New York. We all stood on the bar afterwards and sang "Oh Canada." It was fun.
It's too bad you weren't rolling with Theo Fleury at the time. He totally would have covered your bet for you.
Although that said, guys, I did live directly across from a bar that was all New York Knicks cheerleaders, so I wasn't really looking for Theo a lot of the times.
Nice.
That's another interview. Adam, I just want to thank you for your generous donation of your time today. Your views on hockey are certainly a breath there, at least as far as I'm concerned. Continue to spread your hockey gospel to all those who will listen. You can follow Adam on Twitter at Prototype and at the Hockey News website. If you don't know it, you should. Adam, thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Guys, it's been great. Hope to do it again. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks a lot. All right, guys, we're back, and I have a very shocking piece of breaking news for everyone. I'm sure it'll come as a great shock to you guys and to Senators fans alike. Pascal Leclerc, according to searches on Yahoo, according to TSN.ca, left the game 2 minutes in, and it says here, it's kind of funny actually, was involved in what appeared to be a minor collision with Carolina Hurricanes forward Tom Kostopoulos. So, you know, what do we think about this, guys?
Didn't we just throw out our Leclerc injury predictions last week? And weren't every single one of them, I believe, I don't want to misquote anyone, but definitely in the first half. Francois, I know you were in October, right?
I think I was mid-October or early October or something.
Unbelievable. I can't believe that actually happened. I mean, that's probably an easy prognostication to make, though, isn't it?
I think I had January 1st picked. I think you might have been October.
I know I was October. I think, Tim, you were November at some point. No, I think all of us were like before Christmas-ish.
Really?
Well, no, all of us were before All-Star break. Yeah, you might have been January. I went aggressive mid-October. It is pretty much, well, it's 14th of October, so we're right on the dot.
Well, I guess we should have asked Casper what it was like meeting Robin Lehner. Well, I knew him.
So I guess this means for fans that we get to start beating the old Robin Lehner drum.
It'll make a resurgence. It's been beating for a while, just quietly, but it'll return.
Assuming Leclerc is hurt for, you know, a reasonable amount of time, enough for Brian Elliott or Robin Lehner to steal the job, what do you do?
You got to give the kid a chance to play.
You think so?
Don't make a trade just yet. If it's in the system already, if it's in the pipes. I mean, we all heard the quotes from the Brian Murray, I guess. Is it an exit interview when you get sent down to the minors or cut from training camp? Either way, he sounds confident. He says he's ready to play in the NHL. Brian Murray says he's a man. That's as good as a vote of confidence as I can imagine.
The thing is, though, Tim, what if we're a real shit team about 10 games in, like 3-7? Is that the type of team you want to put a young, potential all-star goaltender in front of from a confidence standpoint? I mean, there are other goalies out there, and I'm not saying he's good, but stopgap, you know, you can sign veteran stopgap Jose Theodore to do some sort of tandem situation with Elliott, whatever may be. But if we're not as good as we thought we were at the outset of the season, and it's not looking like it's going to get any better, do you really want to put Robin Lehner in that situation?
Not only that, but you blow a year off his entry-level contract, right?
Yeah, that's true. And at that point, I think you'd have to reconsider all the elements involved, right? And it'd probably be best for his development to go down and not get burned too quick like Carey Price.
Yeah, for sure. Or Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yep, another great example. Trial by fire. It took him a few years to recover from that, right?
That's a good point. All right, listeners. Well, that's the show for the week. Thanks for listening.
Next week, Robin Lehner.
Next week, Robin Lehner. Yeah, we'll be singing his praises.
Discussion.
Hopefully. Tim, I heard you're taking your talents to South Beach this week. Is that what you're doing? That's what you're up to?
No.
It all comes back to the Miami Heat on this podcast.
All right, guys, I got to get out of here. It's almost T-shirt time.
All right, guys, take care. Thanks for listening to the show.
Good night.
Good week.